It is time to ask the doctors because just like that, it seems like we're on an upswing. Over the weekend, the Commonwealth marked 24 new COVID deaths and more than 5,200 new infections. That number, 5,200, marks a lot more than the 1,200 case increase from the previous weekend, which itself marked an 800 case increase over the weekend before that. ICU beds are filling across the state, exacerbated by staffing shortages, and after months of reporting few cases of the coronavirus, there are now outbreaks in some of the state's jails and prisons. Even as kids 5 to 11 get their shots, many adults qualify for boosters. Now there's talk of a COVID-19 pill. It kind of feels like we're headed in the wrong direction. So what is going on and what questions do you have about it all? 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask your questions, or you can send them on Twitter at Radio Boston. With us this week, Dr. Davidson Hamer, infectious disease physician at Boston Medical Center and a professor of infectious diseases and medicine at the Boston University School of Medicine, and Dr. Gabriela Andujar Vasquez, an infectious disease physician, associate hospital epidemiologist, and medical director of the COVID-19 vaccination program at Tufts Medical Center. Dr. Hamer, thanks for joining us again.
My pleasure.
And Dr. Andujar Vasquez, really appreciate the time.
Thank you.
So phones are blowing up. So as we just get those calls in queue, I'm just going to ask a couple of quick questions. Dr. Hamer, looking at the numbers, I find myself not wanting to think and somewhere in the back of my mind thinking, are we going to do this winter awfulness again?
We may. I mean, the numbers in Massachusetts have been relatively flat, but not decreasing for a while. In the last week or two, as you just noted, there's been a rise, not a big surge, but definitely an increase. And so we're going in the wrong direction, but we're going there, I would say, more slowly than other parts of the region. If you look at Vermont and Maine, for example, they have had a surge in cases in the last month, and yet these are two states that have very high levels of vaccine coverage. So, I think the weather, with people spending more time indoors and people basically starting to have more in-person events, whether it be at work or outside, there's just greater number of exposures. And the Delta variant is the predominant variant still circulating. It's highly transmissible. I think the next month or two could be tough.
That is tough. That's hard news, Dr. Andujar Vasquez. Are you worried? Are you sort of battening down the hatches, as they say?
I'm worried, but I'm cautiously worried, and a little bit optimistic in a couple of things, because I expect, because of behavior, like Dr. Hamer was saying, with indoors and cold weather, we expect number of cases to increase in a certain proportion when compared to summer months. But then, I'm hopeful that because of the vaccine availability now and the number of vaccinations we have across the state, that the severe illness, hospitalizations, and deaths will not be as high or severe as we experienced last winter when we did not have a vaccine available.
All right. I'm going to take us straight to the phones for our first call, 800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK to ask your questions of Drs. Hamer and Andujar Vasquez. We've got Amy on the line in Malden. Amy, what's your question?
Hi, thank you so much. So I'm calling because I have received 2 doses of the Moderna vaccine. I'm now pregnant and I'm due in May. And I'm just trying to strategize as a patient-facing healthcare provider. Do you think that it's more prudent for me to get my booster now, earlier on in the pregnancy with the winter coming, or if I postponed that until later in the pregnancy, would that in theory provide more protection to my baby for when they're out in the real world?
Amy, can I just ask you, when were you vaccinated?
So I was my first dose was in January of 2021, and then the second shot was in February.
All right. Thank you, Amy. And Dr. Hamer, I'll turn to you. And, of course, I always want to be mindful of the fact that, Amy should talk to her own physician. But she used the words theoretically, and she's sort of asking in general how one can think about this. So let me turn to you, Dr. Hamer.
Sure, thanks. So, Amy, that's actually a challenging question, because I think there's two things here. When a pregnant woman, I'm going to do this more on a theoretical basis rather than personal, but, you know, when a pregnant woman is at risk for the disease, you know, I think trying to vaccinate early in the course of pregnancy is important. But you're, you know, at least in this case, you're already vaccinated. You probably have some immunity. But if you're a healthcare provider and you're actively seeing patients, and there's more disease being transmitted in the community, your risk of exposure may be higher. Although, you know, I think we've learned well how to try to minimize that in healthcare settings. So, in terms of protecting yourself, I think it makes sense to do it sooner. But then to have more transplacental transfer of antibodies so that the newborn is protected in the first few months of infancy, I think it would make sense to have a booster later in pregnancy. So I'm not sure there's a real easy answer to this, because I think, you know, but either now or later, both, you know, there's sort of arguments in both directions.
But because of that, I'll also turn to you, Dr. Andujar-Vazquez, because there's a sort of a both and here, and because I just know from months and months and months of doing this that there are so many lingering questions for people who are expecting. And so what's your thought?
Yeah, I think that I would, in pregnancy, we have so much data now that, you know, contracting COVID is it has a lot of health, severe effects on not only mom, but baby too. So I think I would try to maximize vaccine protection against COVID without, you know, compromising safety. We know that it's safe to get the vaccine, including primary series and booster. So I would probably in pregnancy try to get as soon as they're able to, you know, that booster, as long as it's within the time frame that's recommended, right, after the 6 months of that second dose.
All right, let's go back to the phones here. 1-800-423-8255. Ashley in Salem has a question. Ashley, you are on with the doctors.
Hi, thank you so much for taking my call. You might hear my three-month-old in the background. I got my Moderna in March, second one in April, so I'm 7 months out. And I am confused as to why the booster is not available to the general public. I haven't gotten my booster because I'm not in a qualifying population. I'm taking the year off as a school social worker, so I'm not interfacing with my students. But I am interfacing with my three-month-old and my four-year-old every day. So can I get the booster or not yet? I'm very confused.
Ashley, thank you for that. And Dr. Hamer, maybe just also remind us what the basic CDC guidelines are on who currently qualifies for a booster as you answer Ashley's question.
Sure. I mean, so interesting question, Ashley. The recommendations are 65 and older. And then anyone younger than 65 who is in an occupation or a living situation that increases their risk. So that could be homeless, prisoners, healthcare providers, other people that have a lot of sort of outward contact with individuals. And honestly, I mean, I think that's the CDC guidance. The reality is that a lot of people have said, you know, I'm at risk. I'm going to go out and get a booster now. And boosters are readily available. I don't think people are checking too carefully to say, oh, you don't qualify. It's not, you know, it's not that restrictive. So, you know, if you feel, you know, like this would be something you'd like to do, I would not discourage it. My gut feeling is that within a month or two, maybe a little bit longer than that, they're going to liberalize the booster recommendations to everybody. So I think we'll go in that direction before too long.
So two follow-ups. First, I also just want to add, as a person whose first shot was Johnson & Johnson, if you've had the Johnson & Johnson shot as your first dose, and it's more than 2 months after that first dose, and you're over the age of 18, you also qualify for a booster. Is that correct, Dr. Hamer?
Yes, absolutely. That's very important to note. And I think a lot of providers, I mean, you can have a booster with any vaccine, but I think a lot of us favor if you've had the Johnson & Johnson following it with one of the two messenger RNA vaccines.
And Dr. Andujar-Vazquez, there's also this dimension of those who have a comorbidity. Can you talk a bit more about that?
Right. Yeah. So there's underlying medical conditions that we think may put the individual at risk of having severe illness. And so even if they're fully vaccinated with the primary series, we think that they would benefit from that booster to improve the vaccine-mediated protection. And so within those, it's a very long list. There's obesity, there is regular, things that we see all the time, like high blood pressure, diabetes, there's mental illnesses, there's different list of medical conditions that would qualify for a booster shot.
So Dr. Hamer, I want to come back to you before I go back to the phones and just ask one other question. When we have had conversations in the past about people choosing to get boosters, whenever that happens, the pushback that we hear is that keeping a shot from someone else who needs it? So let me just give you a chance to address that question.
Okay. I think in the U.S. and other high income countries, there's plenty of vaccine available, so that people that have not had their first round of the vaccine, really their primary series, have people getting boosters not going to interfere with them. I think one of the bigger concerns, though, is globally in low middle income countries, are we taking vaccines away from, basically poorer countries around the world by going to boosters? And the World Health Organization recommended, because of that concern, recommended that high income countries like the United States hold off on doing boosters. I think the reality is, though, that there's a lot of vaccine being produced. There should be, at least we're getting to the point where there should be sufficient supply for many low and middle income countries. And the real problem there is distribution networks, is having a strong cold chain and then good ways to distribute vaccines and to get it out to really remote rural areas of countries that don't have great both transportation but also, I'd say, drug and vaccine delivery infrastructure. And so that I think I'm less concerned now that giving boosters is really going to take away from my friends and colleagues and many parts of Africa, Asia, and Latin America.
All right, let's go back to the phones, 800-423-8255. Courtney's on in Brookline. Courtney, what's your question?
My question is, if we have an idea of when children under 5 will be eligible to be vaccinated.
Dr. Andujar Vazquez, do we have a sense of the timeline there?
Yeah, absolutely. So the clinical trials are still enrolling. We anticipate that we may have some preliminary, or the data may finish, they may finish enrolling data around January to February of next year, where maybe the FDA will have the data to review. So it should be sometime early next year.
And that's the issue, Dr. Andujar Vazquez, correct? To be able to consider for emergency use authorization, there has to be enough data to feel like we know what the risks are, correct?
Correct. We enroll a certain number of that's calculated, right, by the clinical trial group, and they decide how many people we need in order to make sure that we have enough observations to observe any issues with the vaccine. So we have to just wait for that enrollment to happen.
Let's pick up Julie now in Marlborough. Julie, you're on. Go ahead.
Yes. Hi, can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes. My question is, my daughter will be turning 12 on December 13th. Should I wait to get her the full dose vaccination on her 12th birthday, or should I go ahead and get her the one-third dose ASAP?
Thanks, Julie. And just to clarify, as I turn to Dr. Hamer, for our listeners, emergency use authorization for kids age 5 to 11 is the Pfizer vaccine at a smaller dose amount. So, Dr. Hamer, what about Julie's question?
I think, honestly, it doesn't make that big a difference. The data that led to the emergency use authorization for the 5 to 11-year-old showed that the lower dose that they used across the whole age range was very immunogenic. It led to a very excellent immune response. Sort of children in that age have very healthy, really sort of vibrant immune systems, so they tend to respond very well to vaccines. If you want to wait as long as you're able to protect your child, then they're going to have an even stronger response. But I think that the response to the lower dose of the vaccine is sufficient to lead to good protection.
And just so that we know, and maybe I'll turn to you for this, Dr. Andujar Vazquez, I believe it is my understanding that if your child's birthday straddles the two doses, if your child ages into the 12 and up category before the second dose, the dose follows. Is that correct?
Right. So one thing is I would encourage to get your child the vaccine as soon as possible. And then more is not necessarily better. They should receive what it's the age appropriate dose. So if your child is 11 and the first dose, they receive the 10 micrograms, dose one. And if they turn 12 by their second dose, then they'll receive the 30 micrograms dose. But in the clinical trials, children were within those age groups too, and they received the lower dose, and they had a good vaccine-mediated immune response. So that, like Dr. Hamer said, they respond very well. So I think that as soon as they can get their vaccine, they should get the age appropriate dose.
Let's pick up Nancy in Hudson now. And again, that number is 800-423-8255. Nancy, go ahead with your question.
Hi there. I'm fully vaccinated. I have loved ones who are not. I would like to know the role of vaccination in actually preventing transmission of COVID. I know that a while ago, pre-Delta, it seemed like it had more of a role. But now, of course, we're seeing a lot of breakthrough cases. The intention of the vaccination is to avoid becoming very ill from having received, gotten infected. But I was wondering if there is a role in actually spreading the infection to other people. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, and maybe what we'll do is I'm going to do this in two parts. First, Dr. Andujar Vasquez, transmission to Nancy. So let's start there. Transmission to the person who has the vaccination. Maybe start there.
Right. So it definitely, fully vaccinated individuals are strongly protected against getting infection when you compare them to unvaccinated, right? And there's different numbers out there and how, depending on what we're talking about, whether it's infection, hospitalization, which is severe illness, and death, you know, it's estimated between 5 times more likely, less likely for a fully vaccinated individual to get infected.
Okay, and then Dr. Hamer, but the flip side of that must be asymptomatic transmission to loved ones who are not vaccinated. Talk a little bit about that, too, please.
Sure. I mean, we know that people that have been vaccinated, they have a definitely reduced risk of both symptomatic infection and asymptomatic infection, although with time, some of that protection against all infections, both asymptomatic and symptomatic, declines, and there are good data on this from Israel in particular for the Pfizer vaccine. And when you boost, then you bump up that protection against both asymptomatic and symptomatic, which should lead to individuals who are vaccinated being less likely to transmit to others. You know, I think the challenge is the Delta variant of concern, which is just so highly transmissible that it overwhelms the immunity of somebody who's been vaccinated and allows them to have become infected and for a short period of time shed a lot of virus, but probably then control it. And during that short period of time, they may be asymptomatic or they may be pre-symptomatic and able to transmit it. So, you know, I think it's a tricky thing it's hard to give exact numbers because I think it really depends on how long ago somebody had the vaccine, which vaccine one had, you know, but there's definitely a risk there.
All right, back to you, Dr. Andujar Vasquez. In just a couple of sentences, can people feel comfortable getting together with family for Thanksgiving next week?
Yes. I think that I if I compare what our advice was last year to now, we do have a vaccine that's safe, effective, and it still provides strong protection with all the things that we've discussed today. And I think that to make your activity safer, you want to make sure that the majority of the people in that activity is vaccinated and that we follow certain safety measures depending on who is in the activity and a risk, for infection and severe illness.
All right. And that is Dr. Gabriela Andujar Vasquez of Tufts Medical Center and Dr. Davidson Hamer of Boston Medical Center for this week's Ask the Doctors. Dr. Andujar Vasquez, thank you.
Thank you.
And Dr. Hamer, thanks to you as well.
My pleasure. Thanks for having us.